And there we go, everyone. We are back again for another fantastic conversation on Friday Night Counterattack. This week, I am here with football royalty. This is absolutely crazy. This is definitely the most hyped up I've been for a podcast this year. This is definitely one of our most famous guests that we've had as well. Someone who's definitely left their notes on football in history, on football, of being one of the most future iconic footballers. See, I can't even get my words out. That's how crazy it is. I've got to remain professional. I've got to remain ready for this one because I've got a very special guest here today. And I've got someone who I learned about when I was on holiday in Denmark. I learned about her when I was actually on holiday. I was in Copenhagen. I was with my wife. And then I was doing a few conversations with fans for the channels, interviewing a few people. And I asked a little boy, I was like, who's your favorite footballer? And without further ado, let me introduce this little boy from Copenhagen's favorite footballer. It's Amalie Vangsgaard. Amalie, did I pronounce your name correctly, first of all?
I think you did it well. In Danish, it's Amalie Vangsgaard.
Amalie Vangsgaard.
Yeah, but it's hard. That's very okay. Danish.
That's okay. I'll call you Amalie. But Amalie, thank you very much for joining us today. Before I ask you how you are, I need to roll off some of your credits. Winning gold in the Women's World Cup against China for Denmark. One of the best headers I've seen in the tournament. One of the best World Cup headers of all time, I would say, possibly. It was a fantastic goal. The current Danish Footballer of the Year, which is absolutely insane. And a PSG forward who scored yesterday at the time of recording as well. So if you can hear by my voice, I am very, very excited. But I've got to remain professional because Amalie here is on a tight schedule, so I've got to make sure I've got the questions right. I've got to make sure I don't start giggling and ask for her shirt later on as well. But I will ask for your shirt later on, Amalie. That will always happen. I always ask my guests. But first of all, Amalie, how are you doing today? And how is life going for you right now for PSG and for Denmark?
I'm doing great. I'm having an off day today, so I'm just recharging my batteries for the coming games. Doing good in France.
That's good to hear. Are you enjoying your time in France? Because before we get into your story, is for me, I find it quite inspiring as well. The fact you played in multiple different countries and now you're playing in France. It's really, really cool to see your journey going forward. So before we get into your journey of how you became a PSG forward, how is it comparing to other countries that you played in previously? Is it a bit more difficult, a bit more technical? How have you found it so far, Amalie?
I would say France is more technical. It's more... All players are very good individually. Players are good individually in Denmark and Sweden too, but it's different. I think the quality of the technical level in France is very good.
Yeah, no, that's good to hear as well. And obviously, well, not obviously, but recently the new PSG women's training facility has opened as well. So that's something really cool to speak about because you had a very special guest turn up to visit the training centre. Who was it, Amalie? Who was it that came to visit the PSG centre?
David Beckham came to visit and see the facilities, which obviously was very big for all of us, I think.
It is big for David Beckham as well, meeting you. Insane.
Yeah, you can say that. But for me also, he's a legend and it's a very big moment to get to meet him.
Did you get to train with him on the pitch as well? Or was he just visiting just off the pitch as well?
He was just watching some of the training and then we had to talk after.
Okay. So for some of you who don't know, for Amalie who doesn't know, David Beckham being my footballing hero. So I got to go to Inter Miami a couple of years ago and see his team. But unfortunately, the game that I went to, he wasn't there, which was really unfortunate. I got to meet Phil Neville, his manager at the time, which was really cool. But I never got to meet David Beckham. So you met David Beckham, football royalty from the English men's side. And also this week, you met football royalty from the English women's side. Who did you meet this week?
Williams. Yeah.
They're all looking at you and they're like, yeah, you've got one of the best players in Denmark and one of the best players in England as well. That was a really cool picture as well when I saw that. I was like, Amalie's living the life right now, playing for PSG, meeting David Beckham, meeting Leah Williamson, and they're meeting you at the end of the day. They're meeting someone who has brought so many smiles to the nation of Denmark through the goal that you scored against China, which we will get onto later on as well. But before I start getting hyped up and I lose my breath and I start getting very childish, which I shouldn't be, but I'm very excited, as you can tell, Amalie, as well. I need to know a bit more about your upbringing in terms of how you got into youth football in Denmark, what the quality was like, and how you really got involved in football in the first place, Amelie. So if you have the time to go through that, that would be fantastic.
I think definitely in the first place, my parents played football, going with them to watch them play football, my older brother playing football, my cousins, our neighbors, the boys was playing football.
Everyone.
So all the boys was playing football and me. So yeah, and then I played with the girls who was a bit older than me because we didn't have a girls team in my age group. Yeah, and then it just went from there.
That's really cool to see as well, because it's one of those situations where a lot of people, a lot of footballers nowadays, women footballers, that's how their career started, because they were playing with their family or they were playing with their friends, but they never had a girls team to play with in their local area. With as well, I've heard stories from the Netherlands, heard stories from Sweden, Iceland, Denmark as well, actually, and Spain. So it goes to show that women's football was always growing because pioneers such as yourself, Amelie, wanted to get into football on a more frequent basis, which is really cool as well. So can you tell us a bit about your first kind of, I would say your first kind of experiences going into club football for the women's team as well? Because when you're playing with boys and when you're playing with girls, it's a very different feeling. But how did it feel for you? Did you feel very comfortable, very assured? And mostly, did you feel proud of your achievement of starting a women's team going forward?
I think I was pretty young because then it fitted with going with the older girls. So I don't think I really remember. But
okay.
Obviously, it's nice to play with girls when you're a girl yourself. And yeah, it was fun.
That's good to hear as well. And as we're going into your professional career as well, you had time in Denmark, your time in Sweden as well. You played for Nordsjælland as well, which is just outside of Copenhagen as well. They've got crazy fan base, Nordsjælland. I'm probably mispronouncing that as well, but it's really, really cool that you got to play for some of these teams. How was it like for you playing top-level football in Denmark and top-level football in Sweden? Were there many differences from when you were playing and when you were going through your career as well?
I think definitely the Swedish league is different than the Danish. The quality is a bit higher, and like in general, the level and the speed of the game is higher. So I think Denmark is a great first step, and Sweden is a great second step also to get out in the world. Yeah, I think overall women's football have been developing a lot over the last years.
No, that's absolutely fantastic. And you also took a break from 2016 to 2018. So this is kind of what really inspired me to get you onto the podcast, because it's a very inspiring story as well. And I hope you don't mind telling it for our audience as well, because you took some time off around 2 years, I think, in football. And what did you do in that time, and how did you get back into playing professional football, Amelie?
So I took off for 2.5 years, actually, because I wanted to go out and travel around the world and have a normal job with my school friends. And like, it sounds really stupid when you say it out loud, but for me at that point, I was just like really tired of playing football. I was sad playing football, and I was stressed about playing football. So
you missed your social life though, didn't you? That's the thing. You missed spending time with friends and family. I understand.
I think there's a lot of things you say no to when you play football in that age. And I think for me, I was bad at like balancing both. I wanted to do both 100%, and obviously you can't live both lives 100%, so it became just too stressful.
Absolutely.
So I took the time off, went out traveling, bungee jumping, skydiving.
Which countries did you visit?
I went to Malaysia, Thailand, and Dubai, and then I went home to work and work with disabled people also, actually. Is also a really like nice like experience to have. Then I went to South Africa,
Tanzania,
and Zanzibar, and I went to Taiwan. I went to a lot of different places.
You got to enjoy life as well. You got to spend time with family and friends as well. And how was it with your family as well? Were they very big fans of you going into football, going back into football after spending a lot of time away and obviously doing very well helping your local community, helping disabled people as well? Were your family very okay with you going back into football?
I think they just support me in whatever I do. I think sometimes they have a hard time following because I'm just like, I want to do this, and then I do it. And then they're just like, okay, we are right here. So all the time they're just like standing right beside me and like making everything work. Yeah, they are great support, all of them.
That's absolutely fantastic. It's really good to hear as well. And what was it that really got you back into football? So again, after 2.5 years, you've been to some incredible countries. I've been to a few of them as well. I've been to Malaysia, South Africa, Dubai. So I've not missed out on some of those places. Zanzibar, I really want to go to as well. I watched a David Attenborough documentary recently and he was in Zanzibar. I was like, oh, that looks so cool to go and visit the wildlife there as well. But yeah, I'm getting off topic as well. What was it that really got you back into football? So you've had your time off. You've enjoyed spending time with friends and with family, with loved ones and working a normal job and traveling around the globe, which is incredible. What brought you back, Emily?
So I never stopped playing football to start again. So my goal wasn't to start playing football again. But then my old coach from Fortuna Jørgen called me and asked if I wanted to help FC Nordsjælland get up in the best women's league. They were going to play the qualification and had a really nice project going on for women's football. But at that time, I was like, nah, I don't really want to go train 3-4 times a week.
I'm busy skydiving. I'm good tasting different foods from different countries. I'm okay for now. Thank you, coach.
So I was like, I have to think about it. And then things just like worked out and it was a good timing to go and play some football. And then I did it. And I think the best part of it was like my focus on helping the club, like going into the best league. And the focus wasn't on like me getting back to football. It was more like, I'll do this and then maybe I'll stop after.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true as well. But in that time as well, you scored 12 goals in 35 games as well. And for me, who likes seeing strikers continue to score goals, because in the modern day now, as football in men's side and women's side, strikers do a lot more than just goal scoring. They're building up play, they're dropping back in, they're playing all around the front three. So it was really cool to see that you got quite a few goals in your time at Nordsjælland as well, which is really cool. But the question I think I want to know and the listeners want to know is, did Nordsjælland end up getting promoted?
Yes, we got promoted.
And there we go. That's what I like to hear.
Won the cup final the year after getting.
Oh wow! Was it against was it against Brøndby, local team?
We beat it Brøndby on the way.
Ah, okay. Local derby. That's good to
hear. Yeah, we beat it Brøndby and we beat it Fortuna Jørgen.
And your then, old club.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And then won the finals, so it was good. It was a good year.
Nah, that's good to hear. Thank you very much for telling that story, because that was very fascinating to hear from you firsthand as well, Emily, which is great. And now you're off playing at PSG, which is absolutely fantastic. Already got 5 goals this season. Scored a goal yesterday at the time of recording as well. But what I really want to focus on is your time at the World Cup. It's not every day I get to speak to a World Cup goal scorer. It's not every day I get to speak to someone who's played at a World Cup. It's also not every day I get to speak to someone who's been to a World Cup. So this is a very cool, very, very cool feeling for me right now. So I'm going to start with a very, very obvious one. You played against China. You had a very good game. Denmark were a very good team. They were a fierce team in the World Cup. What was it like going into the World Cup, going into the group stages and thinking, you know what, I've got a chance at making a difference here for my country? What was that feeling like for you, Emily?
I think obviously just getting selected for the group for going to the World Cup was really, really big. It was, yeah, incredibly like a proud moment and a touching moment. Going to the World Cup was also really special. What no one really knows is that I was actually injured in the pre-camp for 3-4 weeks.
No way.
Yeah.
What injury was it?
I got a muscle injury.
So that's not too bad then.
No, but I didn't train. I couldn't really run or train. I had to be cleared to go to the World Cup 2 days before the first game. So 2 days before the China game, I was not like, it was like either I was sent home or either I could do it. So it was a special moment.
It really was as well. So for people who don't know what we're talking about, there was a time when Denmark were playing China in the World Cup and they needed 3 points in the group to get through to the next stages as well, which is crazy. And Denmark have a really good team. You've got some amazing teammates, which we'll get onto at the end of the podcast as well, which is really cool. But it's really cool to see how you had like Haiti in your group. You lost to England. You lost to my team, unfortunately, as well. But the fact is you started the World Cup with a tremendous goal as well. So as that happened, it was a great great time to watch the World Cup. It was really cool to see. But before I start waffling on, I need to go through it as well. It was a 90th minute headed goal that you scored against China, which lifted the nation, which in a way lifted the World Cup, which is still one of the best goals of the World Cup. I mean, how does it feel? How does it actually feel to be like, yeah, I scored a goal at the World Cup for my country and we qualified from the group as well? What was that feeling like for you, Emily?
I think all taking into consideration with the injury not being able to play until 2 days before the game and just like sitting on the bench, not even like expecting to get on the pitch and then suddenly get on the pitch and scoring. It was just like, yeah, insane. It was a big moment for all of us. And I think for the whole team, like it was a good thing to get a good start on the tournament. And yeah, it was, yeah. I think everyone had a lot of adrenaline going on at that point.
You're actually being so humble about this. You've been so polite about this, Amelie, as well. You came on with 5 minutes to go in the game and you scored the last minute winner. How is that not like the coolest thing? That's literally one of the coolest things I've ever heard as well. Like you came on, first game of the World Cup, you scored a goal within 5 minutes, you scored a really good header and you lifted your country up to first position and you qualified from the group, which was great. But I get what you mean as well. You were very frustrated. You had to get through the group. You had to get through dealing with some tough teams and tough opposition. And obviously your injury as well, which is why you were in and out of the side as well. But I still think it's one of the coolest things I've seen at a World Cup. So thank you very much for going through that as well. I mean, it's really, really nice of you to go through that, which is really cool. Now we have to get onto something where you may not want to talk about, but we got to the knockout stages of the World Cup as well. You've been doing pretty well in the Nations League as well, which is really cool to see. Now I've got to ask you your top three Danish teammates. So who are your top three Danish teammates and what have you learned from each of them that has helped your game grow?
It's hard to choose three teammates, I think.
I'd do 11 if I could, but we don't have the time, unfortunately.
No, I think obviously Pernille Harder is a big role model for a lot of young girls and also boys. She's a really good player, and both off and on the pitch, she's a really good person. And I think her way to stay grounded, even though she has been like one of the best football players in the world, is something to learn from also. I think it's hard to choose like three players.
You've got the easy one out the way. You've got Pernille Harder out the way. So that's okay. You're okay with that.
No, I think in general, I am the type of person who really likes the football part also, but also the part of the personal from the players. And I think, yeah, we have a lot of good players and good people in the national team. And I think we have a great group of players who all like can do different things. So I think it's hard to choose three because, obviously the easiest one to pick. But
that's okay. We'll stick with Pernille Harder. And if you think of any more, you can tell me later on, which is great. But from my point of view, from a fan's point of view, and for someone who's in the football media industry as well, it's really looking exciting for Danish football from both the men's side and both the women's side as well. You're developing a lot more younger talent that go on to play at big clubs in both the men's teams and the women's teams as well, which is really cool. And for me, I'm a Manchester United fan. So watching Rasmus Højlund score goals for Manchester United is really, really cool. And Christian Eriksen is also a Danish football icon as well in what is done for the country of Denmark as well. But are there any young players from the Danish men's team or the women's team that you would know that you can tell us back in England that we should watch out for over the next year or so? Because it's going to be a big year for Denmark at the Euros as well, respectively.
I think, obviously, Katrine Kühl, who was in Arsenal and now went on a loan to Everton, is definitely a player to look out for.
Okay.
I think she had some good learnings in Arsenal but didn't get the times she deserved. I think she's a really interesting player and she can she's a really good creative player who can keep the ball and like do things you don't even see before she plays the ball. So I think definitely Katrine Kühl is one to look after.
That's good to hear. I'm looking forward to seeing more of her as the Nations League continues on, which will be great. But yeah, before we wrap up the podcast, we've got two more topics to go through. So one of the topics I have to go through, Amelie, is your top five Danish footballers of all time. So it can be from the men's team, it can be from the women's team. And because you are a professional footballer, I do allow you to put yourself in the list as well. So if you want to put yourself number one, it's perfectly fine. I don't mind at all.
It's hard. I think obviously Christian Eriksen, he's a really good footballer.
I love it. What do you love about Christian Eriksen when you watch him play, or when you watch him play at Spurs or for Denmark? What's one thing about his game that you love to see?
He works hard all the time, running around all the time, but also that he makes it look easy. Like he's actually doing the easy things most of the time, but at the same time, he can do incredibly good things and nice goals. So yeah, I think he have a lot of good qualities and a really good shooting technique.
I think it'd be a great partnership with you up front and Eriksen in the midfield as well, just spraying passes left foot and right foot over the top. You running onto them and finishing them. That'd be crazy to see. So Eriksen's on the list. We're not going to do it in any order, so that's fine. So Eriksen's definitely on the list. Who else have you got on the list for this one?
Daniela Hara, of course. Talked about.
Is she like the dream person to learn off when you're in the changing room, when you're learning from her on the pitch and on the training pitch as well?
I think always when a person has been named the best football player of the world, she's a good person to learn off. I think her personality and her skills is just working really good together, and like it's easy to learn from a person who is down to earth and nice. Yeah,
that's always good to hear as well. It's the fact that when you're on the outside, like I am as well, you just think that all these amazing footballers are just top level. They're focused. They're so driven to do what they want to do. But it's nice to see that Harder's actually got that humility about it to teach other people, to learn from other people and to educate other players going forward as well, which is really good. And it will definitely help you going forward as well, which is great. So we've got Christian Eriksen, we've got Peniel Harder. Sorry, my microphone. We've got three names left on the list as well. If you put Rasmus Højlund on, I don't mind at all. It's perfectly fine. If you put Peter Schmeichel on, I also don't mind at all, which is all good. I'm just throwing some hints up there, Amelie.
Yeah, I think Rasmus Højlund obviously have been doing really good this year. He's
That's what I like to hear, my boy.
Yeah, he's named also Talent of the Year in Denmark. Been doing really great things, like getting through right now. Still having a lot of things to work on, but he's doing really good in a young age. Then Katrine Kühl, who I just mentioned, is like also a young talent to look after. Who should the last one be? I think Mikael Laudrup.
Oh, you've gone old school for this one. You've gone for one of your greatest players of all time, which is absolutely great to see, which is really, really cool. But no, that's really cool. That's your top five Danish players of all time. I'm a bit insulted personally that you didn't put yourself in the list as well. Like, come on now. You've made history for Denmark. That's something that you should be putting yourself in there. If it was up to me, I'd put you in there as well. That's okay. And one of the Danish players that I'm looking forward to watching is Isabella Obeys, centre-back for Denmark. She's really, really good. And she's recently had a transfer now as well, which is good to see. So I'm looking forward to seeing more from Isabella going forward as well. Because she's in and out of the national team, isn't she? But I quite like her watching her play, which is really, really cool. Right then, we've got two more topics to go, which is good fun. One of them is just me getting a bit happy about you being the Danish Football of the Year. So we'll go straight into that. How does it feel that you're actually the best Danish footballer of the year in the women's team as well? Because again, like I said before, it's really cool that I'm getting to speak to you first of all, but that's one of the most iconic awards you can get in your country as well. How was it feeling when you actually got that award and you're like, oh, it was me that got it? How is it for you?
I think in the moment, just very nervous, obviously, because it was on live television with, I don't know how many thousand people in the hall we were in.
And streaming online as well.
Yeah, I think my first thought was like, don't fall up the stairs. So I think it took some of the nervousness out of the speech part, but obviously really heavy and overwhelmed also at the same time. I was like flying in from Paris the same day and leaving the next day in the...
Like a superstar.
Yeah, so it was overwhelming and I'm really happy and... Yeah, thankful for my teammates who voted on me.
That's okay. It's all good. It's going to happen next year as well. I believe. I definitely believe it will, which will be good as well. But yeah, a few quick fire. Again, my words aren't coming out today. I apologize. A few quick fire Q&A questions. Who's the best? This is all national team related as well, so it's perfectly fine. Who's the best player at shooting in the Danish national team?
Signe Brun.
Ooh, that's really cool. Who's the quickest player in the national team?
Frederikke Thøgersen from Inter.
Oh, that's going to be a good one as well. Okay, and finally, who's got the best... Actually, I can't word it like that. I've got to word it differently. Basically, who's got the most charisma in the Danish national team when they play? Who expresses themselves the most when they play?
I think... Katrine Weil.
Oh, I like that list. That's a really good list as well, which is great to see. Again, thank you very much for going through this as well, Amelie, which is absolutely fantastic. And before we wrap up the podcast, I do want to say, from my point of view, I do need to say this as well. It's really, really cool to learn and appreciate from different footballing perspectives, from different points of views as well. But what I really want to know is, what are you excited to do for the rest of the season? Have you got any plans going forward outside of football as well? Because again, you're doing really well at PSG. Like I said before, you could probably play some more games going forward, but I think you're a really good player and a very good player to watch going forward. But have you got any plans going forward, more so at PSG, Denmark, or outside? Any new projects coming up, Amelie?
Obviously, I hope we qualify for the Champions League with PSG and also go into the final of the league and also the cup. I hope we go to the final and everything. For the national team, the Euros, I hope we qualify. Like, that's the next step for us.
The group's looking tough as well, which is really cool to see. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that turns out as well, which would be cool. But again, like, you've got a young team coming forward. You've got some really good experienced heads in the team, which is really cool to see. But before I wrap up, this is something I do with every footballer that I interview as well. I personally believe that I've got the ability to challenge professional footballers at two different football mini games, I should say. One of them is the crossbar challenge. I think I'm very good at the crossbar challenge and I can beat certain footballers at it as well. The other one is a game called foot golf, when you're basically playing golf as a footballer. But I've never interviewed a striker like you before. So I'm very, very scared to put the challenge out. But I will put the challenge out because it's tradition on this podcast. If I ever do come to Paris, or I'm in Copenhagen, or if you're in London in England as well, and you want to meet up and have a challenge of a game of foot golf or a game of crossbar challenge, I personally think I would beat you. But because you're a striker, I can't say it 100%. It's very difficult for me to say it. But do you have any mini games that you think you're very good at when you play, like two touch or crossbar challenge? What do you think, Amelie?
I think I'm pretty average in most.
Average? That's a lie. You're a professional footballer. I think you're pretty good at these ones as well, which is really, really cool to see. But yeah, it's really, really cool to have a crossbar challenge with people, because I've lost a few times, even though I predicted that I would win. And it's been a bit embarrassing because we record it and we put it on our YouTube channel. So it's not one of my favorite videos to record as well, which is really cool. And one word of advice from you. So one word of advice to end the podcast, which would be really cool. If you could tell yourself 10 years ago, one piece of advice that would elevate you to become a better person, a better footballer, just a better person in general, what would it be and why?
I think for my younger self, like, don't compare yourself to other footballers. Like, don't compare yourself to other athletes. You have your own journey, you have your own feelings. Like, if you want to take a piece of candy, you take a piece of candy. If you want to stay up late, you do that. Like, if that makes you happy, you have to do what makes you happy and find the way. Yeah.
Fantastic. Making me blush now as well, because all I've been having is these cough sweets. I've been having lots of sweets recently, and I've just not been enjoying having sweets because I went to football yesterday and my football boots have ripped. My Nike football boots have ripped. So I know you're a Nike athlete as well, so I need to go buy some new Nike athlete boots as well. I might actually buy your pair as well, because you have like three different pairs of football boots, which I see all the time. You've got your green ones, you've got your white and your orange ones as well. I did my homework on you and I'm a big fan of you. So believe me, I knew what football boots. So I'm going to go shopping this week and I'm going to see if I can find the same boots that you have as well. But before we wrap up, I do want to say, Amelie, thank you very much for your time. You've been a great sport, and thank you very much for putting up with me getting really, really excited at times as well, because it was really cool to have a conversation with you. Where can everyone find you if they want to learn more about your journey, more about where you're playing now as well?
Obviously, on Instagram is always a good way to follow how it's going. But otherwise, I think to learn more about my stuff from football or whatever that you want to know is just Google my name.
Go into YouTube and watch your goal versus China.
Or listen to this podcast is also a good idea.
I like it. That's a good plug. I really like it as well, which is good to see. And also, thank you very much for taking the conversation in English as well. I know a lot of Scandinavian countries learn a lot of English as well, which is great. But the fact that I'm someone who's English, but I speak very quick and I giggle a lot as well because I'm very excited. I appreciate you taking the patience for that as well. And also shout out to Ashley, your agent, for helping organize this conversation. It's a great conversation to have and one of my favorite conversations of the year so far, which is great to see. Everyone, thank you very much for listening. Take care. Enjoy this week ahead. And Amelie, thank you very much for your time. I'll see you next time for our crossbar challenge or our foot goals challenge.
Sounds good.
And we're back for part two on this week's episode of Friday Night Counterattack. And big thank you to Denmark and PSG striker Amelie Vansgaard for her time and our conversation this week. Now we're on to talking to another fantastic striker in the world of football, Sara Pararia, because we are discussing the top five strikers in world football today. And it's a very, very difficult conversation to have, Sara, because first of all, I assumed you played up front. Where do you play when you play football,
Sara? You are so funny. Do you know what I do? I play left wing, though.
Oh, no. You're a winger. God. You're a Luis Suarez. No, not a Suarez. You're an Alexis Sanchez, left winger, inverted, coming in, shooting.
Yeah, that is my cut-in is my favorite thing to do. I'm not even left-footed, but I've gotten so used to just cutting in on the left and then swinging.
That's good. That's how it used to be like 10 years ago until they became inverted. If you think about it, on our podcast chat, the presenters could actually make a really good five-a-side. So you've got Travis in goal. You've got me at centre-back. You've got Suki as a defensive midfielder, box-to-box, who can play out from the back as well. You've got Salim as an attacking mid-slash-striker. You've got you as a left-wing-slash-striker as well. I think we'd be pretty good.
We just got to get someone on the right wing and we're sorted.
It's true. Maybe Suki has to go out on the right and we've got a front three. That's absolutely killing it right now, but there's a bit of an unbalance right now in our theoretical five-a-side, which is, what's the term? Transatlantic. It's a transatlantic five-a-side that we've got ready and we're rocking and rolling for this one. Just like how Victor Roque was rocking and rolling for his first goal at the time of recording for Barcelona. And if we are talking about some of the best strikers in world football right now, the question has to be asked, Sara, before we get into our debate and our conversation. I think it's a very easy conversation to have Victor Roque within 2-3 years being one of the top strikers in Europe because of how low the bar is set in European football, in world football, for proper out-and-out number nine strikers. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were speaking about this as we decided what our topic would be for, you know, this upcoming pod. And when we were speaking about strikers present day, you don't see as many as you used to. The quality has totally shifted. So if you're thinking about someone like Vitor Roque, yeah, he's just come to Barcelona. Yeah, he's just scored his first goal. He's barely had minutes for the club. But in 2 years' time, absolutely it could happen. There's not much competition. And I'm not saying that in like a necessarily like a negative way. It's just kind of the way it is right now. Sure, the strikers that we do have right now, they are great, but there are not many of them.
Taremi being one of them as well. Chaotic game happened on the same day at the time of recording. Tell the audience what happened, Sara, if they are not following the Asia Cup right now. What happened to Iran and to Mehdi Taremi especially? He had a fantastic... Oh.
That's literally why I'm wearing the Iranian jersey for my Leopards. Team Melly all the way. I mean, crazy game. You know what? First of all, we have to start with shouting out Syria because they had never made it this far in the competition in the first place. You're taking on one of the best teams in Asia and you take them to penalties. And let me tell you, the penalties that were taken from not only Iran, but Syria as well were great penalties. I'm talking way better than some of the ones I saw in the World Cup, like really quality penalties. So yeah, great game. Iran is now going on to face Japan in the quarterfinals. And this to
that
me
would
is
be
fun.
An amazing final, but it's a quarterfinal, so it's crazy to see that.
I'm a bit upset about it because I do think that should be the final. If I was looking into this tournament before it started, I think that's the final. Maybe Korea, but I genuinely think Korea would probably be the semifinal and these two in the final. And I don't want to sound rude, but it's a bit unfortunate when you have teams like South Korea and Australia and then Iran and Japan, and then you have
Say it.
Jordan and Tajikistan?
Tajikistan. And who else? Your favorite team? Your favorite Asian team?
Qatar.
Your favorites. They're in there.
You know what I mean? Like, you have Jordan and Tajikistan, and then you have Iran and Japan. Like, I mean, of course, this is what happens, tournament-style football, but it is a bit gut-wrenching when you think, like, the two best teams, one of them is going to be going out in the quarterfinal. Unlucky. But listen, it does make for really good quarterfinal setup. Iran's looking tired though, so we'll have to see how they do on Saturday.
Australia also ranked quite high as well, so two of the four best teams left in the competition are going to be out.
But that's what I'm saying. Well, you have two quarterfinals that are probably looking like semifinals to me.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. Again, this just goes to show you that it was built for Qatar, because if Qatar make it to the finals
again, two tournaments in a row.
I'm not saying anything ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Asia Cup is chaotic. AFCON is chaotic. We'll get back on
to
AFCON.
No, AFCON is a different. AFCON is different gravy. It's different. It doesn't even make sense.
All I'm saying is it's the most entertaining football tournament I've seen all year round as well. There's nothing that beats it. The quality, the drama, everything's been absolutely fantastic as well. But one striker who is absolutely fantastic and playing in AFCON this year is Victor Osimhen, but he's not had the best of seasons so far for Napoli, with the change of management, the internal issues they've had with the club as well, the social media issues as well. Does he make your top five for this season, 23-24, Sara, for top five strikers in the world this season?
It's hard to say this season, because last season, no doubt, he's there, right?
Top three last season.
Yeah, 100%. But this season, I think you named some of the issues that he's been dealing with. So I think it would be unfair if we didn't put him in our top five, because I think a lot of what he's dealing with isn't based on him and his talent. Mm. I think we need to see him leave Napoli, unfortunately, but hopefully then go to what looks like is the Premier League, which I think he will excel in, and hopefully do that and, you know, kind of see that Victor Osimhen from last season. And as we're watching AFCON, we've seen his contribution to the Nigerian team and how important he is. We know the talent is there. So I think it wouldn't be just if we didn't add him to the five because of, you know, these kind of controversies going off the pitch, because it doesn't really seem like it has to do with him himself and what he brings.
If I can make a plea to Sir Jim Radcliffe, our new part owner at Manchester United, this is a plea directly to you. If you are looking for a poster boy for Manchester United next summer and Marcus Rashford is to be leaving, I implore you, Sir Jim Radcliffe, please sign Victor Osimhen from Napoli. 100 million, 120 million, I don't care. If you need to sell Rashford, sell him. If you need to sell Antony and Sancho, sell them. I don't care. But we need a poster boy who's going to be leading the line, who can teach Rasmus Højlund how to be a better all-round striker. Bring in Victor Osimhen, please. I implore you. If you're looking for someone who can make this new regime a lot more exciting for Manchester United fans, Victor Osimhen, bring him in. I'd love to see it. But yeah, for me, he's not in my top five for this season as well. Sorry, I would say.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I think we have to remember what he's capable of. Going back to Manchester United, it seems like he has links there. But that being said, Manchester United at the moment do have a striker, and they don't seem to play a formation that works well with him. So my concern would be Victor Osimhen, of course, is better than Højlund. But then what is the point? Do you know what I mean? Like, It's so bad, man.
You're looking at it. And you're watching the Newport County game and you texted me. For anyone listening who watched the Newport County game, you can see how bad Man United are, even against a League Two side. When Garnacho and Antony cannot cross their ball with their opposite foot to Rasmus Højlund, who's in the 6-yard box, who's got no one in front of him but the goalkeeper. They create no chances for him, and it becomes really, really difficult. And of the 9 goals that he scored this season, 5 of them he's created himself by running onto the ball, by individual brilliance as well. 4 of them have been like pre-assists, and one of them has been an assist to Rasmus Højlund. And it goes to show that, realistically speaking, Man United don't play to Rasmus Højlund's strengths. I really believe he should be scoring a lot more goals, but we have inept wingers, Sara. I really agree, bad wingers.
I don't think it's on the striker. I completely agree. But then why bring in an even better striker that isn't fitting into the system? The issue
We've got to sell our wingers. That's the thing. We've got to sell our wingers. They're just not good enough. They just don't create chances at all. You're watching the Spurs team now with Kulusevski, with even Werner, who's come into the side as well. They're creating strikers chances for Richarlison. That's why Richarlison's scoring so many goals now under Ange Postecoglou. And that's just how they're improving themselves. You've seen Ollie Watkins getting amazing chances from Moussa Diaby, Leon Bailey, John McGinn as well. It's really comfortable to see how well these other teams who are normally below Manchester United in the league, and obviously the teams that our co-host support, Spurs and Aston Villa respectively, doing much better than Manchester United because their strikers are getting in and amongst the goals, which is really, really bad.
Travis and Salim, I'm sure they're loving it right now.
And Suki, who's probably swearing on the group chat about Bentancur and Oliver Skip in midfield. But we love to see it. We love to see it, which is great.
Yeah. The thing is that with Osimhen, the other team that I've heard he's linked to is naturally Chelsea because they just have to have their hands in everyone's pocket, apparently. But
Didier Drogba going up to him after the round of 16 game as well. He's like, he's not even Ivorian. And Victor Osimhen's being best friended by Didier Drogba. He's like, I know the owner.
Yeah, no, it's not good because we also see what's going on at Chelsea right now. And do I think Chelsea will bounce back from whatever they're going through right now? Yes, I do. But I've seen too many players recently go there and really decline. And I don't want that for Victor Osimhen. Football doesn't want Victor
Osimhen. So many strikers go down there.
Exactly. So I don't really know. It's between those two right now. It's kind of between a rock and a hard place, in my opinion, because both clubs don't really look too inviting, and especially as a striker, are you going to excel at either of those places? I'm not too sure. So hopefully Victor Osimhen does leave Napoli because it seems like he's already out the door, but you know, maybe go somewhere where he can properly crack on.
And that brings me to my next point, because the next player I want to talk about who definitely makes my list is Lautaro Martinez, who's been absolutely...
Your favorite Argentine.
I do like him. Maybe a bit more than Lisandro Martinez, who is the other Martinez from the Argentina national side. Or German Pizzala. Shout out German Pizzala, my Real Betis centre-back as well. But no, Lautaro Martinez, sorry, I've got to ask you the question as well, because he's been killing it for a good 4 or 5 years now at Inter Milan. He seems to be the mainstay there in Serie A. He's more or less a poster boy in a way for Serie A, being one of their best strikers and the captain of Inter Milan, leading them to the Champions League final last season. Top at the moment of Serie A, so they're neck and neck with Juventus in the Scudetto. I need to hear your thoughts on Lautaro Martinez, because for the casual fan who doesn't watch Serie A, they'll just remember him from the World Cup being the unsuccessful partner of Lionel Messi. But when he's playing in his team to his strengths under Simone Inzaghi, he's absolutely flying, scoring more goals than playing games. And is that a reason why I think I can say it like this. There's one of the few big teams in world football left, Sara, where you've got two strikers as a partnership. So you've got Marcus Thuram and you've got Lautaro Martinez. Do you think Lautaro Martinez could work as a single striker like we've seen with Haaland, like we've seen with Kane, like we've seen with Osimhen as well? Do you think he could really work in a one-striker system?
It's hard to see that because it doesn't seem like he needs to have the contribution from other players in order for him to finish the plays, which isn't a bad thing because he does finish very well. But I don't know if he'd be able to do it all on his own if he doesn't have that from his, you know, partner in crime right now, Marcus Thuram. And the issue that I have with him is that no doubt he's killing it this season. And like you mentioned, he has been a top player in the Serie A for probably the last 5 years. But there's such a weird connection with attacking Argentinian players, playing really well at club level.
And oh, that's so true.
Just playing like garbage for the national team. And there's maybe two exceptions, and that's Lionel Messi and Angel Di Maria. Because we have
hit
seen...
Hit the nail on the head. You've hit the nail on the head there, honestly.
No, but Carlos Tevez, Kun Agüero, Higuain. Like, what
Dybala,
is...
Dybala, another one.
Oh!
Dybala's best contribution for Argentina's tackling Kylian Mbappe in the 122nd minute of the World Cup final. Not a goal or an assist. It's literally that tackle.
But it seems to be like a trend. And I know a lot of people are probably going to say, well, with Kun Agüero, with Carlos Tevez, they were really
Diego Milito as well.
Oh my goodness, you're so right.
Mm. It's all flooding back to me. Rob Palacio is another one.
See what I mean? What is going on? I know, yeah. So I was saying like some of these players were getting injured right before you know, an international tournament or, you know, a continental tournament. So they weren't able to come to Argentina. So maybe they weren't performing, but they still weren't making the team, because I remember so much blame was being put on Lionel Messi during, especially like the 2014 World Cup. And I was like, the only reason Argentina were in that final and took Germany to extra time was because of Messi. The rest of no one else showed up. And that was
and the
really
Copa
bad.
America as well, when the meme of, oh, you know, Messi crying and Sanchez was smiling.
When Chile ran it back twice.
Yeah. You're looking at the rest of the team, and it's like that LeBron James meme of no help. I'll put it in the group later on so you get the reference, but it's just like literally, there was no help around for Lionel Messi at the time. And that's probably why, I don't want to put it all solely on Lautaro Martinez, but he's always had Mauro Icardi with him. He's always had Edin Dzeko, Romelu Lukaku, and Marcus Thuram. So he's always had a strike partner, a dance partner with him, which is why he succeeded really well. So I'd like to get a few Inter Milan perspectives on this one as well. So I may have to ask a few of my Inter Milan supporting friends to see what they actually think of it. But it's a really good conversation to have as well. If two striking partnerships are coming back into fashion, or they're just going to be comfortable in certain leagues. Because right now, Brentford are playing with two up top in a 3-5-2, but you never really see an old-fashioned type of 4-4-2 with a flat midfield four anymore, because centre midfielders don't play that way with just two against three. But yeah, Lautaro Martinez, 18 goals in Serie A at the time of recording. He's ready for his game against Dusan Vlahovic, who I would say he didn't make my list for this one because there are a few other strikers, but he's definitely been absolutely fantastic for Juventus and has finally found his groove in another formation where it's 3-5-2 and Massimiliano Allegri changed his way of playing to suit Vlahovic and Federico Chiesa, another fan favorite of me, I would say. I'm a big fan of Federico Chiesa. But with Dusan Vlahovic as well, this was the opposite side of the coin, Sarah, where you're looking at him playing as a lone striker last season. He didn't really hit it off for Juventus in his full first season at Juventus. And now he's playing as a 3-5-2 with another incredible attacking striker in Federico Chiesa. And now he's back to scoring 12 goals in the Serie A. Juventus are a point or two away from Inter Milan at the time of recording as well. So it goes to show Juventus are very much back in the swing of things in Serie A. Have you been impressed by what you've seen from Dusan Vlahovic over the course of the season?
I have been. I mean, it's definitely like a step up from last season, I think. But I have an issue with Juventus. Like, I just don't find their football of late very intriguing.
It's not for the faint-hearted. It's very tedious, repetitive, boring, slow, long ball football at times, which suits Vlahovic's game. But it gets the job done a lot for Massimiliano Allegri. And that's how he's kind of changed his way since he's come back to Juventus as well. A lot slower. Yeah. And Juventus fans are very, very angry with the way that he continues to play this dull brand of football.
It is. It's difficult, especially as like a neutral fan, when you used to, you know, think about the Serie A in like the early 2000s and what that football was. And now you're looking at it now and you're like,
You're like, let me bring my phone out whilst the first versus second is on Serie A on Sunday. Yeah, it's a bit tedious right now with the style of play. But with Dusan Vlahovic as well, I think he's going to be an absolute showstopper of a footballer as well. I know he's very much suited his game to Premier League football as well, to international football, Serbia. But I think he's going to be one for the future at this time of speaking. 24 years of age as well. The most goals he scored in the season is 29. So I'm looking forward to seeing I think he costs the same as Gonzalo Higuain when Juventus signed Gonzalo Higuain as well. So that's also a topic of conversation of how expensive good strikers are and if they're paying for potential more than anything now as well with strikers. But I need to know someone from your list, Sarah. Who do you think is going to make it onto your top five list? Because remember, it's strikers nowadays. They can play as wingers or strikers, kind of like yourself. I'm kind of bigging you up here, Sarah, to think that if you were in a five-a-side, a transatlantic five-a-side for Friday night counterattack, you would be our number nine up front. How do you say nine in Spanish? Siete?
Nueve.
Nueve. What's siete?
Seven. Davide, there you go.
Seven, that's fine. Give that to Sophie.
When we were talking about this pod, you initially had said you wanted proper number nines.
I did say, but with some people now, they're like, oh, they can play on the left or they can play on the right, but they also play as a striker as well. I'm like, fair enough. Let's see how it goes.
Well, then you tell me how you feel about this, because this player is an absolute chameleon and he has been one of the best players in this season across all of Europe. And that is Antoine Griezmann. And I think the versatility of this player, we've seen him play on the right, in the left, in the middle. So I think it would be, I know he's not your typical striker like your Lautaros, your Vlahovic, you know, some of these other names we're going to get down to. I don't want to leak them just yet, but I think it would be a disservice if we did not add Antoine Griezmann to this list, because
I can support your point with that one, Sarah, because now it comes into the point of what even is a normal striker these days, because all the strikers we're going to be talking about now, from now until the end of the conversation, they're all different types of thoroughbreds of strikers. They're not going to be the same type. They're not going to be the same target men or complete number nines or mobile strikers or wingers turn strikers like Antoine Griezmann, for example. It's going to be different varieties, my friend. So I'm happy to support this one of Antoine Griezmann. Tell us a bit more about how it's shone for Atletico Madrid in the Champions League and especially in La Liga with 18 goals so far this season.
I hype him up with my video this weekend. I'll just give you that much right now.
I'm ready for it. The listeners are ready for it.
Atleti, Real Madrid, obviously. But listen, with Griezmann, he's had such poor luck with the way that he was at Atletico and then came to Barca. And then
you ruined him.
And then he left Barca. And then Barca won the league. It's a matter of a year. You know, the unluckiness he has, granted, he still is a World Cup winner. We have to give him that. Like, let's not take that away from him. But I just think that he's such an underrated player still. And the fact that he's having a resurgence at the age of 32 is really rare. You don't see, this is kind of the age where players start to decline. And in fact, Antoine Griezmann is only accelerating.
He's decline like Neymar, you mean? He's also like 32 years old in Saudi Arabia.
He started declining at like 28.
Painful. When he moved to PSG, that was the start of his decline.
It was not this. It was right, just 90 degrees.
It was like let's rip up the contract and let's just leave. It's all good for me. That's what Neymar was doing.
Neymar is forever one of the saddest stories in football. We can't even get into that. But
one of the greatest comebacks is Antoine Griezmann. Sorry, I'm interrupting you. I apologize.
Really? No, you're not. He's been incredible for Atleti this season. Atleti this season also look like they're kind of having a resurgence. You know, we see them kind of underneath Barcelona and Real Madrid a lot of the times. They don't really perform as well in the Champions League. And this year, it seems like Atleti are really going for it. And they're not scared. A lot of the time with Simeone ball, we see them very defensive kind of minded. If there's a draw in the last 10 minutes, they'll just park the bus. They won't go for it. But this season, it seems like, you know what? Get out there. Let's be, you know, offensive. Let's be attacking here. Let's really, you know, go for it, try and win La Liga, try and win the Champions League. And I think that's because of two players specifically. One of them is Antoine Griezmann. But yeah, the tactics are working in his favor from Simeone. And it's really exciting to see. And it's kind of ironic because now Atleti and Real Madrid this season and this season alone, do not take this any other way, but has kind of become what the Clásico used to be, because Barca this season have not been exciting whatsoever.
I know that was painful for you to say out loud. I know that was painful.
It took everything out of me. Yeah,
very brave of you, but I know that was very painful for you, a Barcelona fan, to say out loud. So completely.
I'm at least a realist. I want people to understand that I know what's going on, guys. Like, give me a break. But these two have been, the last two games we've seen from them, 14 goals in two matches in football. It's so good to see Atleti doing this. And I'm so happy that Griezmann is kind of the main man. And genuinely, I think he's one of the top players, like I said, in the world right now.
I would agree with that, because when you're looking at how he came back into the swing of things at Atletico Madrid, he got that permanent deal back at Atletico Madrid. All these other strikers that were in and around the club, they were like, no, Antoine Griezmann is the one that's going to be playing. They're going to build a team around him. And that's what Diego Simeone's done. He's recognized that. He's had that intelligence to go, you know what, we're going to make this team flow through Antoine Griezmann because we want to get the best out of our best player. And that's how it's worked for Atletico Madrid. And I'm really excited to see what they're going to bring against Inter Milan in the Champions League in the next month or so when that happens. I mean, at the time of recording, it's January, but it's going to happen in February, March time, which is all good. But I'm really excited to see how Antoine Griezmann comes back into it. And remember, another European Championships in the summer as well. So we could see prime Antoine Griezmann again, but then playing as an attacking midfielder like he did in the World Cup, because he has so much technical ability. He can play anywhere in the attacking six positions, I would say. Right wing, left wing, striker.
For France too. Like, he was
dominating.
So important to that team. Oh my goodness. Yeah, no, he's so versatile. Like, there aren't many players like him, and it's amazing. So yeah, I think Antoine Griezmann has to be in the top five. He's brilliant, and I think we're just going to see him get better and better. He has 18 goals right now. We're just kind of past the halfway point in La Liga. I think he can get that to 30. Like, genuinely. Like, he is on fire.
Who can beat Antoine Griezmann realistically in La Liga for top scorer? I can't see anyone at all beating him this season. Bellingham. Imagine how... I don't want to be rude, but imagine how La Liga's striking form has dropped because they've got Griezmann and Bellingham as one of their best attacking outlets.
They've got Lewandowski with like a cane trying to play for Barcelona.
Don't disrespect him like that. He was good once upon a time. Oh,
he was for sure great, but like it's
even last season he was pretty good for you as well. But it's just the season too far.
Like it was one season, and we should have stuck to the one season deal. But yeah, no, you're not wrong. I mean, Bellingham. How many goals is Bellingham at? 14 in La Liga.
14 in La Liga. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean. He could. He has the service for sure. So we'll have to see. But I hope Griezmann wins the Pichichi because he deserves it. There's somebody he plays alongside, though, that maybe could give him a run for his money.
Oh, it's been fantastic this season. But I'm going to divert to his national teammate, who has been the one and only talking point for me of the January transfer window as well. And again, Sarah, it's an in and iron situation. We are going to Paris. We are going to France for this one. We are going to the one and only Mr. Kylian Mbappe, who we can't really talk about strikers without talking about Kylian Mbappe, because as of around November, December time, they moved him from a winger to the number nine position as well. So they got rid of Gonzalo Ramos, who recently made his deal permanent from Benfica to PSG. And he's not even making the starting lineup anymore. Their young striker, Hugo Ekitike, is barely in and around the squad as well. And Randall Colomwani is now moved to a left winger to accommodate Bradley Barcola, the youngster, and Kylian Mbappe, who's now playing as a striker once again. And Luis Enrique is getting a tune out of him in Ligue 1. But I think, honestly, when you think about it, every manager has got a tune out of Kylian Mbappe in Ligue 1. It's in the Champions League where it matters, because Kylian Mbappe has scored 19 goals in Ligue 1 this season as well. His most goals in a season is 42 goals as well, Sarah. So I'm looking at it thinking, imagine if he does have another 6 more months at PSG and then he moves over to Madrid and he's going to be against Antoine Griezmann in the Madrid derby next season. Could you see that happening? Or do you think Kylian Mbappe is one and done with Madrid and is happy staying in Paris for a few more years?
And you know what? I agree. We have to talk about Mbappe when we have this conversation. But can I tell you how exhausted I am talking about Kylian Mbappe transfer rumors? Because this is what, year three?
We don't even talk about transfer rumors on Friday Night Counterattack, but we can't ignore the one transfer rumor that dominates world football. Apart from Mourinho being linked with Man United again. That's a crazy transfer rumor that I saw today. We can ignore that one for sure. But no, go ahead. Kylian Mbappe. Could you see it happening?
Yeah. I think it's like the sixth transfer window now. I think it's about 3 years.
The biggest will they, won't they?
They just keep going and going. And honestly, honestly, when I see it, I scroll right by. I scroll right by until I see Real Madrid or Kylian Mbappe post on their social. At this point, I don't even trust Fabrizio because I'm just like, I think there's
just
so much going
all.
On.
Block them all, Sarah. Just wait until you see Mbappe on the pitch at the Bernabeu in a white shirt.
That's true, though, because, I mean, at this point, wasn't he halfway out the door last year? And then, you know, the president of France called him up and said, all right, we'll make you the prince of France or whatever the heck he, you know, promised.
Peace to the city. It's going to happen.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I can't. Politicians are involved. I'm out. I am out. So yeah, if he does go to Real Madrid, Barcelona are in trouble. It's going to be crazy. It's good for La Liga, of course. I think he will excel at Real Madrid as well. He needs to get out of PSG. But until I see it, I don't know if it's going to happen. So we can't talk about the theoretical because I think we've been here too many times.
I would say so as well, because with Kylian Mbappe, when you get to just appreciate the play that you're seeing as well, you and Suki put it so eloquently at the end of last year as well. He's just one of the best players to watch when you're watching him pound for pound against any of the top attacking talents in the world. He's so aggressive on the ball. He like you mentioned about another chameleon earlier on as well. He's like a chameleon sometimes, because sometimes he'll just slow the game down and speed the game up at his own demand, at his own impression as well. And you're looking at someone like, he plays somewhat similarly like him. Julian Alvarez, in my opinion, has a similar game to him, but is nowhere near as quick, nowhere near as precise, even if he has scored 2 goals tonight against Burnley, but is nowhere near as agile on and off the ball as well. And you're looking at it and you're just like, there's so much more that can bring Kylian Mbappe to the top of world football. Multiple Ballon d'Ors, multiple international trophies, and they really are in the golden age of French football now as well. And that's the problem that Didier Deschamps will have in the summer, of Who do you play in which position for France? Do you continue with Giroud as your number nine? Do you keep Mbappe on the left-hand side? Do you keep Griezmann as an attacking midfielder? Where do you fit these French attackers all in and around this team? Because another one's doing very, very well at Inter Milan as well. And do you get him into the starting lineup as well? Many questions have to be asked, Sarah.
It's tough to be France right now, isn't it? Like, let me just pick from my, you know, hundreds of good players that we've produced. It's incredible. Their football federation is just immense. But yeah, I think truly Kylian Mbappe is the best attacking player in the world right now. And I know there's a few others that we're going to get to.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get to him, I think personally for me, he is the best. He is miles ahead of a specific player that plays at Man City, in my opinion. I think he just, like you said, a chameleon. He's so well-rounded. He's still quite young. Like, he's 25. I think he can improve still, is my point. I think his biggest downfall is playing for PSG, because I think we need to see him in not only a more competitive league, but just a different system completely. Because although PSG keep rotating out their managers, it's still been under the same ownership. And I think he's just got to get rid of that drama, and him himself needs to just like completely disconnect. So I'm really hoping we see him go somewhere where he can thrive, because we've seen what he's capable of. That World Cup, like that final was insane. Kylian Mbappe said, "I'm going to score 3 goals since the rest of you were sitting down." He won a World Cup when he was like 18 years old. Like, he is really incredible. And he's one of the like footballers that I feel like we're talking about where he has the sauce. He actually, like, he'll break your legs. He'll run right by you. He'll dangle you. Like, he's so good with his touch, his control, his pace, and he has a wicked shot. I don't think I can say that about some of the other players here. But Mbappe,
the variety he has as well is incredible.
What I mean. Like, he's such a superstar. I think we just need to see him leave PSG and, you know, hopefully go somewhere and just tear it up, because I think you're right. It's like Ballon d'Or. It's like, I really could see him being like on the level of like Ronaldo and Messi, not in the sense of maybe their playing level, but winning like, you know, up to like 4 or 5 Ballon d'Ors. But he's wasting time at PSG. Like, we're 25. Let's make some moves.
That's literally what football fans have been saying for the last 3 years at least. Yeah. They like, you got to the final of the Champions League. You didn't win against Bayern Munich. Go to a team that really needs a striker, because Karim Benzema's left Real Madrid as well. Go be the main man in Madrid. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But realistically speaking, I don't see an improvement that much at PSG, because every time you look at PSG, we judge them on their Champions League because of all the money they've spent and how much they're meant to be growing as a club, as a brand as well. And it doesn't really happen, because Kylian Mbappe, in a way, feels lonely at PSG. He doesn't have the star quality around him like he did with Messi and Neymar. But again, they felt lonely because they were then left behind by the rest of the team behind them as well. The quality was lacking behind, in all honesty, as well. And in the coaching staff, and in the technical areas as well, and in the boardroom. And it goes to show that it wasn't built properly, and Paris really wasn't bought. Paris really wasn't built in a day or in a week, like they said back then.
You're so right. And I think it would be really exciting to see a player that is considered maybe the best player in the world to compete in a league that's just slightly more competitive. And nothing against the French league. There's still a top 5 league in Europe, but there are better leagues. And that's just a matter of fact conversation, whether it's England, Spain, or Italy. But I think, like, it seems like he could go to Spain. But I think he just needs to make a move in general. Like, I think you're too right with, you know, the way Paris is going. And the thing is, when you're constantly shuffling out the managers, a team can't settle properly. It takes time for a manager and a team to kind of just understand one another. Like, there's no cohesion, if you know what I mean. So I think
it takes time to mold. Even the little things of getting used to the language, getting used to the way people work as players. And you've got a squad of 25, 26 people to work with. And if you're focusing on the main players all the time as well, you may then get worried about the fringe players as well. And all these little things don't get taken into account when a new manager comes in. And I was having that discussion today with my friend about, I still think Luis Enrique's got a world-class job in him left after PSG. I still think he's got that quality about him. But
back to Barcelona.
Are we going to see it? Are we going to see him bring a Champions League back? Are we going to see him bring an international trophy for another club, country perhaps as well? There's so many conversations that we could be having about these coaches, but that's another topic for another day as well. But Kylian Mbappe definitely makes it into our joint list, because I agree with you 100%. We are going from the boy in Paris to the boy in Manchester, and unfortunately we are not going to be talking about Rasmus Højlund as much as I want to, but I'm not going to ruin our listeners' entertainment by talking about a Danish striker. I'm going to be talking about a Norwegian striker who I said earlier in the season failed his country, and he definitely failed his country by not qualifying for the European
Spain
Championship.
Spain and Scotland said, see you later.
Scott I wanted you to do that in a Scottish accent. That would have been so funny. Imagine. Oh, I'm not going to bait you out to our audience of what accent you did earlier.
It has to be natural.
But Scott McTominay with his Manchester Scottish accent, because he is from Manchester and represents Scotland, he brought Scotland through to the European Championships, and Norway didn't even get to the playoffs, for goodness sake, as well. So it goes to show that Edin Dzeko can do it for Bosnia, and you can see it with other countries as well, where they've gone through because they've had a really good striker. Dimitar Berbatov doing well for Bulgaria as well. Once upon a time, they didn't make it, but they made it through to the playoffs. Zlatan Ibrahimovic as well, getting Sweden too. And Henrik Larsson, of course, can't not mention Henrik Larsson.
Henrik, like, you were waiting for it. You were waiting.
I was teeing it up. I was going to do one of my foot golf reveals where I take my shirt off. And again, Sweden underneath, but it wasn't the case. Erling Haaland let down Norway. Martin Odegaard let down Norway this season.
Well, that's the thing. You're comparing this Norwegian side to a team that genuinely had like a one player. We're talking about not only Erling Haaland, but Martin Odegaard as well. Like this, it's tragic, but they did. They let them down.
Honestly.
You talk about your Danish striker though. You get back to that.
I'll go back to Rasmus Højlund as well. Now, we spoke about him earlier as well, which is absolutely fantastic. But I still have a belief that if this club is to be built around Rasmus Højlund, in my opinion, Manchester United will thrive once again, because in the past, when you're looking at some of the most successful Manchester United sides, they were built around the striker. And now you're looking at it, you're like, who is it really built around? Bruno Fernandes? Are we building around a centre-back in Lisandro Martinez? A goalkeeper in Andre Onana? No, thank you. Build around a striker. That's how we get the best out of clubs. That's how we get the best out of teams. And all the best dynasties, barring one or two Italian teams, in my opinion, were built around attackers. And that's how I think Man United will grow forward. And hopefully we'll be talking about Rasmus Højlund in a lot more promising light as the season progresses. But we have to talk about our Norwegian friend Erling Braut Haaland, who is at Manchester City, coming back from an injury as well, already on 14 goals this season, absolutely fired away Manchester City in the Champions League and fired them to a treble last season. But despite being injured as well, he's still the top goal scorer in the Premier League at the time of recording as well. And last season, he scored 52 goals, Zara. With Erling Haaland, does he have a lot more to improve in his game to be considered one of the best strikers in world football, or has he done enough already under Pep Guardiola and Manchester City?
Me, personally, I think he has a lot to improve on. And I say this because, for me, Erling Haaland is not your... He doesn't seem like a footballer to me. That's the only way I can kind of describe it, right? I think he's the kind of person where, similarly to Ronaldo, Cristiano, he trains so hard. He has the mentality, which is great, because in the younger players, we see it go down the drain, Marcus Rashford. But he seems to have like a really good...
I'm not even talking about Marcus Rashford. I'm looking at Sancho as well. I'm looking at so many Man United players as well, which is really, really bad. And we can go into...
Manchester.
I could do the accent. I could do a whole podcast with the Manchester accent, but I don't think my employers would like me very much.
Sadio
Mane, the best player in the world. Is he going to make the list? I wonder if he makes the list as well.
My gosh. No, but with Haaland anyways, like, I love that he's so committed to the game. He trains really hard. You hear all these rumors about how he, you know, like, he's still growing, like, hangs, like, you know, what? Crazy. That's great. Amazing.
Sleeps
like,
in an oxygen tank, eats liver
for
dinner.
Yeah. Like, he has, like a plug to his head. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's like a cyborg. That's the joke. And I think it's great. Like, he's very committed to his health and his longevity. Perfect.
Good role model, I'd say. Very good role model for young kids.
For sure. I don't even think he drinks, like, nothing like that. That's great. Like, he's committed, and I really appreciate it.
He appreciates a kebab every now and then. And I'm like, a man that appreciates kebab, I don't mind it. I was going to ask you off air, but I'll ask you now. It's going to be a bit insulting me asking you this now, but which cuisine is better, Syrian cuisine or Iranian cuisine?
Oh, do you know what? I'll be honest. I shouldn't answer that because I am not as well-versed in Syrian cuisine as I
fair
am.
Fair answer. But it was a game today, and I was like, both cuisines are very good food. So I'm just like,
I will say it's probably Iranian just because I'm biased. But I
don't blame you.
Just the flavors we got going on. I think, like, a lot of Middle Eastern food, there's like a similar kind of vibe naturally being, you know, geographically located close to one another. But Iranians, like, I feel like they do it a little bit different. Like, we just add a little bit more like spice and flavor. And we have a lot of like veggie dishes too, which I appreciate because I don't
eat sauce as well was crazy. The hummus.
Yeah, no, it's lovely. It's lovely. It's great comfort food, to be honest. You can't eat it though and make a plan. Like, you have to sit down and then take a nap. That's the kind of food it is.
Erling Haaland has a kebab before a game. I'm joking, he doesn't. But he says that he likes kebab as his cheat meal or something. That's crazy to see that he likes
That's
kebab.
So good.
And he likes kebab on pizza as well, which is a crazy combination, having kebab pizza.
Stop, that is not good.
Honestly, nasty, like, absolutely nasty.
No, the Italians are shaking right now.
The Turkish people are shaking as well. Oh, my
No, with Erling Haaland though, like I said, I get all of that. His work ethic is fantastic, but he's not really like a proper footballer. Like, when he plays, he needs service. First of all, it takes a lot for him to do it kind of on his own. So I think that's something he can improve on, because it seems like he's very much like the Tappan King in a sense, because he's massive. And listen, there's no disrespect when I say that, because it takes a very strategic person to know exactly where to be, how to get there, how to make sure the ball goes past the keeper, with what part of your body are you using. I don't want people to think that I'm disrespecting him in that sense, but when I compare him to Kylian Mbappe, I'm taking Kylian Mbappe 10 times out of 10, because this is a player that actually has the technique. Not only can, you know, tap a ball in, but he can take, you know, a defender out from the wing and then cut in and do it on his own. Where it's like, I don't see that with Haaland. And maybe that is just my bias as the football that I prefer to enjoy. But to me, Haaland, I think, can improve a lot still. And I hope he does. And it seems like he could, because he has that mentality. And I get he scored 52 goals last season and won the treble.
Jeez.
But I want to see that continue then. Not every year, but I do wonder, is that a one-off? Are you now, like, what are we going to see this year from you? What are we going to see next year? Are you ever going to leave City and go somewhere else? Like, I'm just curious to see how this is going to progress, because if it does progress at this level, it'll be crazy. But I think it's too early to say that he's considered one of the best. People were doing that, and I was like, don't you dare compare him to R9, please. Thank
crazy.
You.
Absolutely crazy, that comparison as well. It was not great. Even people saying, oh yeah, it's the best foreign import we've ever had in the Premier League. I'm like, stop, calm down a bit as well. Like, not having that at all. Shout out Eric Cantona, shout out Thierry Henry. Shout out Cristiano Ronaldo as well. That's what people were saying. But I got two questions to then ask you in a kind of retort way as well, retorting way. One, I personally think with Erling Haaland, he's an old-fashioned striker that we get to appreciate and enjoy in the Premier League, because he is doing what a number nine striker would do 10, 15 years ago. Put him in the box, 18-yard box, in around the area, score any type of goal, get the ball in the back of the net, get your goals up and be hungry for goals. And I think that's something that's missing in modern football, personally. And the second thing is, do you think that his style of play, and in a way, the way that he's then, not limited, but the way that he plays in a certain type of way at Manchester City, do you think that worked against him in this year's Ballon d'Or and FIFA award ceremonies, where he won so many trophies, he was so lauded upon across world football for the goals that he scored, for bringing Manchester City their first treble in their history, and he still fell behind Lionel Messi in both the Ballon d'Or and in the FIFA awards of 2023. What do you think, Sarah?
It's hard to say regarding the awards, because people vote for the best player. I can't, you know, speak on everyone who.
But that's the thing, because I was having this conversation. I was thinking all these captains of different countries and captains of clubs as well. And you're seeing who votes for them. It's all Messi, 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 Messi. Journalists, Messi, 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 Messi. So what is it about Erling Haaland that they're not seeing about what is done? Is this going to be a stigma for him suffering from success in a way? That's what I want to kind of know.
It's not an Erling Haaland thing, in my opinion. If I'm looking at it and I was put in this position of having to vote, I mean, naturally I'm biased as a Messi fan, a Barca fan for sure. But I think when you're comparing any player to Messi, it's not a good day for that player, because these people, I think they're looking at it as who is the best player in the world. It doesn't matter what they won. When you think football, Lionel Messi is the guy. He is the best footballer that has ever existed. And I think that's what they're thinking of. Now, is that fair? No,
They're definitely not looking at Erling Haaland scoring the 52 goals. They're just like, Messi, let's go for it. Job done.
That's exactly what I'm thinking, though. They're thinking about football in general. They're thinking about, if I have a team, who am I taking? They're thinking about, you know, what have they done? Not what have they done, but like how they play football. Messi makes people feel things that they've never felt before. You know what I mean? It's completely different. And I don't think that's Erling Haaland's fault. But I think the way people vote, they're not voting on what someone did that year. They're voting on who they think is a better overall player in the grand scheme of things. And I think Messi is still a better player than Haaland. Like, that's not, I don't care if he's not winning anything. Look at what the guy does on the pitch. And I think if people are thinking like that, then that's why they're going for Messi. It has nothing to do with Haaland, which is unfortunate.
That's the thing. Because it's like he then went to the Dubai Awards. That is now a new award ceremony. So over the last 3-4 years as well.
Making up all awards.
Yeah, I know. We should do like a Friday Night Counterattack Award and invite Erling Haaland.
Do you know what we should do at the end of the season? We should do an award show.
No, we do. But it's like, it's just me and Salim and there's no actual trophy. So I think this time we'll actually get trophies.
I want to be in it and we should all dress up.
We should. We should wear our suits and our tuxedos and stuff. Be looking good.
We should do that. That's fun.
We'll message a group about it. It's a good conversation. Well, I'm sure our listeners will appreciate it as well. It'll be like our own Oscars in a way, our own team of the season as well. And at the end of it, would be crazy. Joint team of the season debate. Not like yours last season, Zara. That's how I first knew about you as well. Kepecha Kvaratskhelia in centre mid. I'm not over that. I'm not over that at all. How you did that. That was crazy on Room 442. Shout out Room 442. But yeah, finally, the main striker, before we talk about honourable mentions, we'll talk about our main striker first. Harry Kane, Bayern Munich, unbelievable. They're only 2 points now behind Bayern Leverkusen in the Bundesliga. They're looking to rock and roll against, I think, Lazio in the round of 16 in the Champions League. And Harry Kane, like we said a couple of weeks ago, could be firing England to an international trophy this season, and it could be something incredible. But we've got to focus on the now of what is done since leaving Tottenham Hotspur for Bayern Munich. Tottenham are playing very good football, expansive, exciting and enjoyable football. Harry Kane is scoring goals and still assisting and creating chances for his teammates in Kingsley Coman, Jamal Musiala, Leroy Sané, and he's having a lot of fun doing it at Bayern Munich as well. My question to you is Harry Kane going to be the mode of striker that you think everyone's going to look to follow growing up this over the next couple of years as well? Because I'm looking at it, he's a fantastic number 9, but he's also someone who can play as the number 10 as well. He can play as a deep line striker who can spray passes, who can get involved in the build-up of play as well. And a lot of people in England thought he would be perfect for Manchester City instead of Erling Haaland as well. But they went for Haaland, who can stretch to play, who can take on defenders with his power, with his pace. But if you're looking at a modern-day striker, Sara, I don't think Erling Haaland has that mold of a modern-day striker. Harry Kane is, for me, what a modern-day striker looks like in terms of gets involved in the play, builds up from the back sometimes as well, can score headers, free kicks, volleys. He can score penalties when he wants to. Sorry about that France one. I don't forgive you for that, Harry Kane. But he can score with both feet, and he's scoring a ridiculous amount of goals this season as well. And he was Bayern Munich's highest ever transfer record signing as well, at €110 million as well. But what do you think? Do you think Erling Haaland is the way to go for modern-day strikers, or do you think Harry Kane is the way to go? Because like we said earlier, every striker we mentioned so far, Sarah, is a different type of striker.
Yeah, that's true. I do think Harry Kane is your more traditional one, even maybe more so than Haaland. Because, well, like you said, like when people think about strikers, I don't know if they're considering Griezmann. I don't know if they're necessarily considering Mbappe. Yes, he switched his position at PSG, but he still usually plays on the left. That is his preferred position. So when you do think of a striker, if they're not considered in the conversation, everyone immediately thinks of Kane because he is that more traditional striker that really does play in the center. And I think he may be that one that kids are looking at now that they want to be when they grow up, that people will remember as one of the best strikers of this generation, if not the best one, because he is that traditional striker and he gets the job done. And on top of everything, he is a good guy and he's somebody that kids look up to. And I think you're laughing, but I think that's
I agree. Because it's like, even like my work colleagues in like previous jobs, when they're watching Harry Kane, they're like, oh yeah, he's a good role model for my son. And they don't watch football. And I'm just like, I'm remembering these kind of moments when people who don't watch football, besides the World Cup or the Euros, are talking about football because of someone like Harry Kane, who brings a positive influence to football, really, and to a positive influence to sport. Like Marcus Rashford used to do when he was feeding the whole of and the United Kingdom, and he's feeding the kids of people, and the politicians didn't want to feed kids during lockdown. Whatever happened to that Marcus Rashford, who then also had... He had his best ever season as well at Man United after he's feeding the kids. So he
Last season.
Yeah, he was doing that. And then now you're just like, where are the kids? He's like, I don't know. I'm going to go to Belfast, mate. I'm going to go to Belfast. It doesn't care about the kids anymore. Marcus, care about the kids and you'll care about your future as a Man United player. That's all I'm saying.
Marcus.
Think of the children, literally. But back to Harry Kane as well. Amazing role model. You were saying
so. It's true, though, because not only does he seem like a sound guy, he's boring, but in a sense, that's good. Look at Lionel Messi.
I disagree. He's not even that boring anymore. He's having a lot more fun on social media with all of these challenges from the Bundesliga and Bayern Munich. And we never really saw that in the Premier League.
I didn't know that. But still, like, even that...
He's a lot more fun now. Which is, I think Germany's brought the best out of Harry Kane in a way. He's a lot more fun to watch on social media.
Oh, good. No, but you know what I mean? Even, like, a couple stuff on social media, that's still not, like... He still, like, keeps to himself, it seems. He doesn't, like, you know... His family's like, he seems like a very family oriented guy. And this is also just what I'm seeing. Sorry. Of course, we don't know personally, but the comparison is Messi. People like Room 442 always gives me, slack. And he's like, oh, Messi's so boring. But, yeah, because he's winning everything. He doesn't need anything else. He just wants to hang out at home with his kids and his wife and hang out with Luis Suarez at Inter Miami. And they're just having a good old time. And this to me is Harry Kane. But I think it's a good thing because I think in the long run, the perspective is there. And it seems like he knows what's important. And I'm actually like, yeah, he just seems like a good old, normal guy. Just like all of us.
Is there something considered normal in 2024?
I don't know what that even means anymore. You're right. But no.
But yes, down to earth, humble, normal guy. I get what you mean. I honestly get what you mean as well.
Yeah, so I think that he is really like the striker of the generation at the moment, recently. Luis Suarez. I have Luis Suarez ahead of Harry Kane. That's a personal opinion. We can leave that in the past because we're not talking about that today.
I don't talk about racist footballers, so I'm good to leave out Luis Suarez. That's all good. So we'll leave it be. It is considered a swear word on this podcast. So I'll bleep it out when we have it on as well, which would be good. Say no to racism, kids. That's my influence to the youth of today. Say no to
that. That's to the youth, yeah. So back to Harry Kane, because he's for the youth. Yeah, no, I think like he's just a well-rounded, proper striker. Like you said, he can also play in that 10 position. And I think it's maybe because he's a bit boring that he's not getting as much of attention as he could.
Just focused maybe on his job. Like Haaland, just focused on his job. Goal scoring.
It could be the fact that he's not won a trophy. Could be that. Well, I think that it's so funny because Harry Kane's not won a trophy, he won whatever with Tottenham, the EFL or whatever, that Audi Cup, whenever the heck that was.
He didn't know what he did when the EFL. It was a preseason trophy. Audi
Cup. Yeah, that was. But the fact that he still doesn't have a trophy, but he's still considered maybe the best striker in the world right now. He does the talking on the pitch, and that's it. And I think he's great. And I really like him as a player. And I'm really happy he's doing well at Bayern Munich. But as we know, at Friday Night Counterattack, we are going for Bayer Leverkusen to win the Bundesliga. Sorry,
we are. It's the little things as well. Like I was listening to our recent podcast, our Asian topic, and we're like, we are big fans of Takefusa Kubo. We do want to see a high scoring game for Real Sociedad. When they drew 0-0 on the weekend, I was disappointed. But then I realized it's the Asia Cup as well, and they're missing a few players. So it's one of those things. I'm looking forward to seeing some of these players as well going forward. But before we get on to our honourable mentions and call this quits for our podcast, which has been a fantastic debate, this is what happens when I get my energy back, ladies and gentlemen. We're up for it. Sarah's up for it. This is what we like to see and we like to talk about as well. What's our top five looking like as a joint? Because this is how I got it in my mind right now. We've got Antoine Griezmann, we've got Lautaro Martinez, we've got Erling Haaland, we've got Kylian Mbappe, and we've got Harry Kane. Those are the five I think we have joint on our list. Am I in agreement with you?
No, you're right. I'm not rating that from 1 to 5, by the way. Don't even.
I thought you said nah. I was like, oh no, who have I missed out? Lautaro Martinez.
There's one in particular that I think should really be there, but I'm not really sure if he can replace anyone. Mm. But yeah, I mean, it's a good list. It is a good list. It's a good list. A good list of players.
Go on then. Who's number five for both of us? Where are we going with this one?
Oh my God, you do actually want us to rank them from 1 to 5?
I'm joking.
Oh, I was just sit down. No. I'm not.
Let's let the audience decide what their top five is. We'll make it as a poll on social media, which will be great for this week. So We've got Lautaro Martinez for Inter Milan. We've got Antoine Griezmann for Atletico Madrid. We've got Kylian Mbappe from PSG. Erling Haaland, who's got back from injury for Manchester City. And we've got Harry Kane from Bayern Munich as well. So we've got five players who we think you guys would have to choose from. We're not going to do a start bench sell because that would defeat the whole purpose. But before we wrap up, honourable mentions time. And I've got a few, but I know, Sara, you've got one or two that you wanted to mention who you thought could have made the list. Where are we going? Are we going back to Madrid by any chance?
We are going back to Madrid, and it has to be Alvaro Morata. I think he's just been fantastic this season. I also just think the fact it's similar to Griezmann, you know, 31, and having the season of a lifetime. Just he has 13 goals in La Liga, 5 in the UCL. He's tied right now for top scorer in the UCL. Fantastic. The most goals he's ever scored in a season was at Real Madrid, actually, with 20. He has 13 right now. Ooh. He could beat that. That's very exciting. It's all very exciting. And I just think when we see these, you know, not older, slightly older players, I guess, but like
more mature players.
More mature. That's a very polite way of saying it. Mm. But I do think it's really like, it's incredible to see, you know, the longevity and how they handle their career, basically. And I just think it's also coming at the best time for Spain ahead of the Euros, because we've spoken on this podcast several times about the fact that since David Villa has, you know, been out of that national side, Spain haven't really been able to find someone to replace him. And it looks like Alvaro Morata is, you know, a little glimpse that could be that. Maybe definitely not on the same level. Sorry, definitely. I want to.
But he showed glimpses at Euro 2020, but it was always the case where Luis Enrique, I think, was a coach at the time. He always played with a false nine. So he played with Dani Olmo, Mikel Arrizabal, you told me earlier about Kepa Arrizabalaga, but I can't say Mikel Oyarzabal 5 times.
Oyarzabal.
He was on the wing. And then you had, I think, Ferran Torres on the right. So it was always the fact that since David Villa and Torres moved out, phased out of football, you had someone like Diego Costa coming in. You had like Rodrigo come in as well, Iago Aspas, but they were never first teamers. They were always bench players coming in. And I think that's where maybe the new manager has to kind of change it in terms of Alvaro Morata. Is he going to be the starting number 9 for Spain at the Euros? Do you reckon that will happen, Sam?
He has to be. He's the guy.
No more false nines, nothing like that. No.
I hope not. I hope this, you know, Spain play a little bit more just logically, because I mean, what we've seen in the last couple tournaments from them, this, you know, it's tiki-taka football, but it's not good tiki-taka. And it's like, let's not focus on ball possession, just score the goals. So yeah, hopefully we'll see him have a really good tournament regardless of Gabby being out, Balde being out. But Alvaro Morata has to be mentioned in this conversation.
Nah, it's all good. Any other honorable mentions before we wrap up?
Yeah, I think we should. Well, we referenced Marcus Thuram, of course, at Inter. He's been absolutely fantastic this season. But
A step up as well for Marcus Thuram when you're thinking about Borussia Mönchengladbach World Cup finalist last season, well, for France. And now he's taken over Edin Dzeko, not Romelu Lukaku's role, Edin Dzeko's starting role for Inter Milan as well, again, scoring 8 goals in the season. His most has ever scored for Mönchengladbach was 16 goals. And the fact that with Marcus Thuram and Lautaro Martinez, when they've been combining for goals, they've contributed for 42 out of the 50 goals that they've scored this season at the time of recording. And I think that's magnificent from Marcus Thuram and Lautaro Martinez, and also a positive into why two strike partners are so good for the modern gamers now, because you can work so well with one another as well. The 26-year-old has been absolutely fantastic, and I'm really excited to see what he can bring going forward. And hopefully he's another weapon in Inter Milan's arsenal in the Champions League in the knockout stages for the rest of the season.
Yeah, no kidding. I also think there's something so poetic about seeing like the next generation of a footballer, like their kid, their son is now thriving. Oh, it's brilliant, because it doesn't happen that often. So that's great. But I mean, there's a few that we have on this list. I mean, Son, we have not spoken about him. Ollie Watkins.
You know my feelings about Son Heung-min. But Son Heung-min's been very good this season.
Yeah, so you're the worst.
I'm not the worst. I mean, he got attacked in that game against Saudi Arabia. They were pulling his hair, they were pushing him. And I remember when Suki was saying, shout out Suki as well, because I was listening to it. And Suki was right, that the South Korean players are taught about discipline and being honourable footballers when they play for their country. And then I'm like, he's not like that when he plays for Spurs, but when he plays for South Korea, he's very disciplined and very calm. So I'm like, ooh,
yeah.
Nicely done, yeah. Marking with Son. So yeah, as everyone knows, I'm not a big fan of Son, but do respect what he's done, and especially playing as a striker now. 12 goals and 5 assists for Spurs this season, and he's going to be absolutely killing it when he comes back from the Asia Cup, which will be good. A few for me. I can't not mention what's going on in the Bundesliga. So Serhou Guirassy, absolutely killing it for Stuttgart. 17 goals in 14 appearances so far this season. I remember earlier this season, we were speaking about how he could have been a really good January signing, because he only had a release clause of around £20 million and no one bought him. No one took the risk on him, and Stuttgart are going to benefit from that for the rest of the season as well. You mentioned Ollie Watkins before I interrupted you about Son Heung-min, but I've got to talk about Alexander Isak as well. Watkins and Isak are looking like some of the best strikers across the Premier League, and they're looking like really hungry strikers who are always in and around the goals going forward. And Inter Milan are looking at your boy Mehdi Taremi from Porto as well. What's your thoughts on that?
Yes, Mehdi Taremi. That's my Jude Bellingham Mehdi Taremi jersey. Yeah.
Doesn't he have his own trademark celebration?
No, does he?
I think he might do. I'll have to double check.
Is it the P?
Yeah, it's that one.
Yeah. I didn't know that was like specifically. I don't know what that's for.
Peace. Peace in the Middle East.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
Is that P on my screen? Yeah, it is.
No, it's definitely a P. I know it's a P, yeah, because like, you said it. And
I wasn't sure if it was like that, like in a different...
Is it for Peace in the Middle East, though?
Yeah.
Oh, good for him. No, that's good. That's nice that there's a little bit of meaning there, too. Yeah, listen, I think it's great that he could potentially go to Inter with respect to Porto and the run that they've had in these past few years. It's been incredible. But Inter Milan are a bigger club, and I think it's important that especially these Asian players get that opportunity, because we don't see it as frequently. So I think it would be so huge for not only Iran, but all of Asia, for a player to be playing for Inter Milan. That's incredible. So I really hope it does
work out. Shirt sales through the roof as well in Iran.
Yeah, I love him. He's the best.
Off that red card that you got today.
Don't even talk to me about it. I'm trying to figure out the carry into the quarterfinals.
Yeah, it should do. Normally it should do. It'll be a one-game suspension.
Is it one game? Because like they usually, in the tournaments, they have it like anything in the group stage doesn't carry into the next round, and then they have the quarters and the semis, but it won't carry to the final.
Sarah, the thing is like every tournament has different rules. So I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on with the Asia Cup.
Hopefully it doesn't carry over. Because
with AFCON, it doesn't carry over, and then you'll get people suspended for the round of 16 games after getting two yellow cards, and you're like, this is crazy. Like, it's just a normal red card, but...
I don't think it would be fair to any of us, not just me being Persian, but Mehdi Taremi is, of course, Iran's best player. And I think you guys, everyone wants to see a fully loaded Japan and a fully loaded Iran and them to play the game that they play. Because this is, like we said, this is a final. And I think if you're missing one of the best players, it's just a bit of, it just takes away from it, doesn't it? So I hope he'll be there. But yeah, he's absolutely one of the best strikers. I think he's top 10 for sure right now. Incredible, incredible player.
A few more honorable mentions from me. We're going to go for Santiago Jimenez, Mexican hitman for Feyenoord as well. I think they got knocked out of the group stages of the Champions League, making it to the Europa League. So I'm looking forward to seeing more from him as well, which would be great. Brian Brobbey is doing pretty well at Ajax, even though Ajax aren't doing that great this season as well. And obviously, I can't talk about... Well, we spoke about Bayer Leverkusen earlier. So Victor Boniface, who's now injured until end of April because he got injured on AFCON duty. So his 10 goals in the Bundesliga has been absolutely critical. And his assist and his gameplay that's had for Xabi Alonso's success in the Bundesliga so far. So it's going to be a big miss until the end of the season. And Real Betis striker Borja Iglesias has signed on the emergency six-month loan as well.
I know, I sent you that. How exciting is that? It's weird to see Borja Iglesias, though, go to Germany. He's such a Betis player. It's like...
He's a proper Spanish player that I'm looking at him. I'm like, imagine him in Germany working with Wirtz, with Schick, with Hoffman. But I think the Alonso appeal has it all. That's why Borja Iglesias, like, you
totally,
know
what? Totally. They have that Spanish connection. And Iglesias is also like a proper like criminal on the pitch. Like, he's a rough big guy. Like, I think the Bundesliga is much more aggressive than the Liga, so I think though he kind of transitioned into that well, because he's a bit of a savage in a good way. Like, he uses his body to his advantage. He's a big guy, so yeah, exciting to see that. Very interesting move. But yeah,
definitely. Before we wrap up, one last question from me to you. Name a striker who you think is going to have a big success over the next 2-3 seasons and why. You can say Victor Roque if you want, by all means.
No, I don't want to say anything about Barcelona, to be honest.
Don't worry. It's been a bad week for both of us. Even though Man United won, it's been a bad week for us still.
Yeah. Let me just rack my brain. Do you know what? No. Hold on a second. I'm trying to think of somebody much younger, actually.
It doesn't have to be young. They can just, like you mentioned it again, Griezmann, Morata, they've had a second coming at Atletico Madrid. That's the kind of point I'm making, that they can still go on to different heights and different levels after having a few years going downhill.
I mean, surely we, like, if Mbappe goes to Real Madrid, I think we all need to hide. We all need to take cover, because I think we know what he's capable of. And I honestly think like he will only get better at Real Madrid. That's a bit of an obvious one. So yeah, that's a cop out. I'm not going to use that one. I'm actually going to stick with Mehdi Taremi, especially if he goes to Inter Milan, because he's only been getting better and better. We've seen Porto in the Champions League, that run they had last year as well. We've seen what he's doing with Iran. I mean, yeah, they didn't make it out of the group stage in the World Cup, but they're making a really good run here at the Asia Cup. And I think international level, club level, going to a bigger club, the Serie A, he will tear it up, him and Lautaro Martinez. Yes, that is the answer.
Back your boy. I'm loving it. It's going to be great. I'm backing someone who doesn't play for Man United, who plays for Newcastle United, backing Alexander Isak.
Because I was going to say that, you know, good.
With the whole £73 million loss that Newcastle have got with FFP, and they do have to sell players in the summer transfer window, I would love to see Alexander Isak go to a big club around Europe. Maybe an AC Milan, or maybe even somewhere like a Napoli, where he's replacing Victor Osimhen, and absolutely thrive in the Champions League environment, because he belongs there. He has that talent. He has that aura about him as well. He has that London accent that a lot of people like to take the mick out of, but it's just a normal English accent from what I've seen from Alexander Isak. But again, I think it's going to be bigger than Newcastle in 2-3 years' time, and I'd love to see him at one of the best clubs in European football. I still think he could do a job after Harry Kane and be the focal point at Bayern Munich, even though he has ties at Borussia Dortmund. But I think with Alexander Isak, all the potential in the world is there for me to see one of the best strikers come out of Sweden since Zlatan Ibrahimovic, in my opinion as well. And Henrik Larsson, got to plug it out.
Henrik Larsson, and we'll end it on Henrik Larsson.
We will end it. We'll end it there as well. Big thanks to our special guest, Amelie Vansgaard, my new favourite PSG striker as well, so shout out to Amelie. Big thanks to Sara Pararia, my new favourite, I was going to say FC Toronto striker.
Yo,
that team, that team doesn't exist, so it could be our FC FNCA striker, so I'm looking forward to it as well, which would be great fun. I'm looking forward to our new and improved, upgraded award ceremony at the end of the season as well, which will be great. We'll message it in the group. But no, thank you very much for your time. Everyone, thank you very much for listening. Do take care as well. And we'll see you on the next week's podcast. Goodbye. Let me stop. Oh, no. Wrong button.